nerds? This is Mr. Touchdown, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast.
We here at the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast would like to pay tribute to Leaping Lanny Poffo. In the upcoming weeks and months, you will hear a variety of his poems read by some of the biggest names in the world of professional wrestling. Once we've compiled enough poetry, we will put out a tribute episode to Mr. Lanny Poffo. And what better way to start off a tribute than with the one and only Mr. Monday Night, Rob Van Dam, as he presents to you an original written by himself, his tribute to Leaping Lanny Poffo.
With high drop kicks and flying scissors, he entertained us fans. With hope and heart, we hollered and cheered for the ref to raise his hand. Giving us his all, we stayed enthralled, thinking each would be his night. Win, lose, or draw, I mostly recall the moves he brought to the fight. Thinking outside the box with an arsenal that rocks, he used a fresh approach to the game. For inspiring dreams, things are owed, it seems. Leaping Lanny was his name.
This episode of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, CWE Radio, Audio Boo, and ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, home of 9 amazing podcasts. Featuring the Turnbuckle Throwbacks, Phil Rea and Dave Mega Powers, the Midnight Jury, Mike Dornganger and Adam Henning show you the world of professional wrestling, pop culture, and much more. The Fallen Angels, the Neckbreaker Podcast, where heavy metal meets pro wrestling. 2.5 Wrestlers with Kevin Matthews, Pat Buck, and Jay Silva. Just Incredible's Pro Wrestling 101, where you can learn the ins and outs of the wrestling business. We also feature 2 shows from our brothers to the north. The Apex Radio Show and the Forearms and Funk Radio Spectacular. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. Check it out. And now, from Studio B, it's the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. Tonight's hosts, Shining Wizards Eddie and Shining Wizards Matt. Tonight's guest, the King of Old School, Steve Carino. Hello. We are back. A mere 24 hours after I recorded the WSU CZW recap. This time, though, I'm lucky enough to be joined by somebody who I haven't seen in over a month.
Over a month?
Shining Wizards Eddie.
Hey.
How you doing, buddy?
Good. It's really been a month since I've been on the show.
I think the AJ one, there was a snowstorm.
That's right.
The next week... You had to work late.
That's right.
The week after that, you had to work late.
And that's right.
Here, right, I think.
Or yeah, like 3 weeks I haven't seen you.
2 or 3 weeks?
Yeah, something like that. Crazy. It's been crazy. Crazy winter.
So it would be, if we were in the original studio, maybe we'd play like the boys are back in town. But I don't have a soundboard. I have nothing. Studio B is like gangster as hell.
I have a cat on my lap.
Yeah, Mr. Kitty has taken quite the liking to Eddie.
Yes, it's the most pussy I've gotten in, I'd say, like a month.
Yikes. I digress.
And I digress. Killer show lined up this evening.
We do. We do. We have a lot of wrestling talk. We have, as you heard in our new intro, which maybe Tony can take some lessons from and maybe do a little production instead of watching your fucking romper room or whatever the fuck you're doing tonight.
You know, speaking of production, you know who has great production on our network?
Who's that?
Midnight Jury.
Yeah.
Like, they put a lot of time in.
Yeah, Mike has a voice for podcasting.
He does. And the way the song choices and the commercials, they're doing a hell of a job, him and Adam and Sydney Chadwick over there. So props to Midnight Jury. Props, property, prop, props.
And I would like to give props to a couple fans that noticed me at the CZWWSU doubleheader.
Oh, God, were they short yellow bus fans again?
They were fans with money for t-shirts.
No shit.
Yeah, I sold 3 t-shirts.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So it was pretty cool. It was nice to see a lot of the guys. I know JP Meyer was there, a Facebook friend, and he actually ordered a shirt off of Pro Wrestling Tees later that night. Rob, who I did the podcast with, Bill, who brought a t-shirt, who was sitting right in the entrance for when they came out. He rocked a nice pink and black Shining Wizards t-shirt. I did feel bad. He found me as soon as I got into the CZW show, and I didn't have an XL in my bag. I had to go back out to the car.
Oh.
Well, I sold a lot of shirts, and I gave – not a lot. I sold a bunch of shirts, and I gave shirts to a lot of guys. AJ Styles got a shirt. Alpha Female got a shirt. So a lot of pictures coming your way.
Awesome. I like pictures.
Pictures are fun. Anyone rocking a Shining Wizards t-shirt's a good picture. Player Uno finally sent us something.
That's fantastic. Wearing the mask and all, right?
Yeah, that's Super Smash Brothers, supporters of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast.
Yes, so you had quite the exciting weekend.
I did. For the most part, you can listen to everything that happened at CZW, WSU on the last episode that we just put up. But I did save a story for tonight, and it's my run-in with Drake Younger. Drake did the podcast about 2 weeks ago, and he made his return to CZW. There's a huge line. I've never been to the Flyer Skate Zone, and it's big. It's a big place. But there was a line to get in, and Drake comes out, and he's got Brett Lauderdale.
Bret Hart?
No, Brett Lauderdale, the kid from the referee. He's always at PWS running around.
Yeah.
Kid.
I know.
Yeah.
I know
he does the RF video stuff.
Yeah.
So they have the camera. They're coming down the line, and I didn't even see the camera. I wanted to say what's up to Drake because Drake was kind enough to rock our shirt at the PWG show, DDT4, last Friday night, as was Johnny Gargano. He comes down. I go, oh, Drake, Matt from the Shining Wizards, gives me a fucking big hug.
Did you feel his boner?
I did not feel his boner.
Oh.
I wish I did.
Damn it.
And then he's kind enough to go, oh, we're doing some backstage stuff for the RF video shoot that I'm going to do. You know, he's like, this is Matt from the Shining Wizards podcast. Check these guys out. They're good guys. And I was like, man,
wow.
Nice.
Classy.
Just a nice guy. Drake Younger was such a nice guy. I talked to him during intermission. Fucking so happy. I was like, you got an 8x10? We signed it to the Shining Wizards. I'll buy one. He's like, I don't have 8x10s. I was like, oh, you're killing me, bro. Just an all-around dude.
That's pro wrestling 101. Justin Credible will teach you that. You need to always have an 8x10. Always.
But, yeah, just go back. Episode 132, the WSU CZW recap show. And you'll get all your information there. I'm not going to overkill you guys with a bunch of stuff you may have already listened to. But last week, I know, I'm pretty sure you watched Impact. Did you not?
I did. I've been actually, I don't know if it was last week or the week before, Lopez and I watched Impact basically together. We just kept doing a comment back and forth on Facebook. He started a thread.
Ooh, I was going to ask if where there was a Taco Bell that had a TV in the kitchen.
Hey, hey, hey. Hey. Oh.
I'm going to take a little off-road. Lopez, you have a fucking problem with me having a drink in my hand during every picture Eddie posts? I like to drink and have a good time. Get off my dick, son. It's not my fault you're some fucking Mormon, you Mexican Mormon.
Mexican Mormon. Jesus Christ.
So you've been following the TNA product?
I have been lately, yeah. I have. Because it's easier to watch when they're not in the impact zone. I can't fucking watch it when they're there. It's just, I can't. The crowd kills me. I can't watch it.
Yeah, I mean, they're over there, and they were in Glasgow, Scotland.
Yeah.
I mean, huge turnout. Great for them.
Great for them, indeed. The thing with Impact is they're doing things that are so good, but they're doing things that are also so bad. Dixie Carter being in so many segments back to back to back is just awful, and she's taking up so much time. She's there so much. And the storylines make sense. The characters make sense. The reason the wrestlers are wrestling makes sense. So that's something that, you know, there's continuity. However, the way the show is structured needs to be rearranged because they'll do like 45, 50 minutes of talk and then like 8 or 9 minutes of wrestling. Then another 10 minutes of talk and then like a closing 15 minutes to 20 minutes of wrestling. Once they get that formula down and get Dixie Carter the fuck off my fucking television – I'll be able to watch the show because, quite frankly, I can't fucking stand her at all. I can't stand her. It's just like change the channel heat. And from what I understand, the reason the Jeff Jarrett, Toby Keith buyout of TNA went sour is because the only way they would sell TNA to Jarrett and Toby Keith is if Dixie Carter remained a prominent on-air character and Toby Keith was like, yeah, fuck that, y'all. And they're going to start from the ground up. So, you know, they have balls to just start from the ground up. But yeah, man, I mean, Dixie Carter, shit, she's got to go. She has to go.
Yeah, but isn't, I mean, if she's playing that heel, isn't that, it's working if you fucking hate her.
It's not that kind of hate, though. It's the get off my fucking television hate. Give her like a 10 minutes here and there. Just be like, all right, whatever. Fine. But just, she is just the show. And you know she's on the show because she wants to be a star. It's at the expense of talented wrestlers that she is on the show so much. It's her own ego and her own selfishness, not for the good of the product. She sees it as her television show. Fucking Dixie Carter.
Now, I do agree that I think she's on way too much. So if you take it and you cut it back to where she's on for just a segment.
Yeah.
You still hate her?
Not as much, no.
But you hate her.
No, I hate her because she's on TV so much. I would hate her like I hate Vicky Guerrero if she only had a few segments. If she had as much time as Vicky Guerrero does or used to on SmackDown, not so bad. You know, come out, go, you know, fucking make a match, have a tantrum, and leave. But every backstage segment to the ring, in-ring segments, backstage again, just go the fuck away. Just go away. And I'm so tired of these battling owners' angles that just needs to stop. I mean, you brought an MVP who bought into TNA and is going to change things. I mean, we've seen this shit so much.
Yeah, I think it's a little different, though. I think the direction they're going and how they're putting newer talent into the spotlight.
They have to because they can't afford to pay the established talent anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, it's not a bad thing if TNA gets the WWE rejects. Not saying Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards are rejects, but I mean, I think in the long run, that's WWE's loss, and I think they're better off in TNA. And guys like EC3 and even Rockstar Spud, and now we're getting the emergence of, you know, Magnus as the champion. Rude is starting to make his way back to the top where he needs to be. Not saying he's a young bull,
right,
a young buck, but he is. He needs to be on the top of the card. And Gunner, you know, he's going to be a main focus going forward. So it's nice to see that they can bring in these MVPs, and you still have your Jeff Hardys and all this other ring
right,
world.
Right, I agree 100%. Even though Hardy is coming back, and they're going to feature him probably at the top of the card, because let's face it, it's like Cena. He's the one that sells the T-shirts. He's the one the fans respond to. But Rockstar Spud is probably my favorite character. I love what Eric Young's been doing with
yes,
Abyss.
I was just going to say, Eric Young
fucking
is my
great.
Is probably the best thing for me right now.
Yeah,
Impact.
Him and Rockstar Spud are fantastic. And Magnus is just such a great looking champion. Like, he looks like a champion. He's kind of playing the Ric Flair type of champion where he can't get the job done by himself. You know, he's just, they're doing that really well. They're doing a lot right, but it's overshadowed by so much bad. I mean, like, anything Dixie Carter, bad. Just too much. It's too much. If they fucking knock that back a peg, I think they'll be in better shape.
Well, I think, and I've said this, I don't know if you've listened to the last handful of podcasts because we've been pumping them out two a week, but I think you're going to see less Dixie once, and I stand by this statement, once AJ comes back and when Sting comes back.
AJ comes back and Sting?
I think it's all a work. I think she's got her little, you know, crew, and they keep, you know, even after AJ and Sting left, they reiterate the idea that Magnus got rid of them and Bobby Roode helped, and they keep throwing that in your face. And I think it's going to get to a point where they don't, you know, this crew, they took Kurt Angle out because he's got an injured knee. They eliminated him from the picture Thursday night. You know, MVP and the Wolves, I mean, nothing against them, but I don't, can they fight the good battle? You know, Hardy comes back. Can he fight the good battle? It just seems like they're going to be knocking people off one at a time, and it's going to come down to, like, Joe against the world at Lockdown or some pay-per-view in the middle of the summer, and, you know, it'll be like an outsider deal. AJ and Sting come back and save the company. At least that's what I think. I think that's the angle they're going with. And I think TNA is different in the terms that even they have guys under contract, they let them go and they let them work independent booking. So saying AJ didn't sign a contract and that he's not part of the company, but he's out there doing all this independent stuff, makes sense because Robbie E does a lot of indie stuff. Gunner does indie stuff. A lot of these guys are still working the indies. So it's not a far-fetched idea that they play the storyline out where he's not around. Sting hasn't signed his Legends contract yet. At least I don't think he has. There's been a lot of rumors and a lot of reports, but nothing to confirm that he signed with the WWE.
Yeah, but I mean, on this, my take is, and from what I've been hearing from people that know Mr. AJ Styles, is that even in recent interviews he's been doing, that it's clearly not a work. They couldn't afford to pay him what he wanted, so he walked, and he's doing fine on the indies right now. As far as Sting is concerned, I think
Sting.
I think he's a shout out to Phil Rea there. I think he's finally been talked into performing and being a part of WWE because now it's now or never. And I don't believe they're going to bring him in until after Mania, like they did with X-Pac years ago. They sometimes always have a surprise after Mania. And then they're going to start a slow year build of Sting to familiarize the WWE fans with who the hell he is, because let's face it, a lot of WWE fans weren't around when Sting was in his prime, and a lot of WWE fans don't really care for TNA. So I think they're going to use a year to introduce Sting to the fans and then do something with him and Taker probably at the next WrestleMania, because I think this year is probably going to be Taker Brock. If Brock's going to kill him by mistake.
I think who, the Undertaker?
Yes. Just one stiff punch, he's just going to fucking turn into dust.
I have we'll get into that later, cuz I want to ask you a question. I don't know if you listened a couple weeks ago pertaining to the Undertaker, but I mean, okay, TNA, Abyss, Eric Young, Monsters Ball, great. I enjoyed it. And then the rest of the card really was flat for me.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking the Bully Ray Ken Anderson casket match.
Oh, just...
You guys are so much better than that.
They don't care.
So it's just like,
it's
come
like they're
on.
It's like this. That's what you see when a couple of guys are just not motivated. And they're just not motivated. Also, they might have been really fucking tired. I mean, it was a long tour. They taped like 8 episodes in one night or something like
that.
Yeah,
but I mean, just the idea of them. I think the casket match is this week.
I don't know. I think so.
Spoiler alert. That's really a spoiler. Apparently, Adam Henning doesn't like when I spoil things. So I will try to do my best not to spoil them. But just the idea, if you're not the Undertaker,
there
shouldn't
be
a casket match.
If you're not Vampiro, there shouldn't be a casket match.
If you're Vampiro, you should be in a casket match.
You're right. It's the Undertaker's match.
Against
the
Grim
Reaper. Well, why the hate on Vampiro?
Oh, man. That best of WCW Nitro Volume 2. He had a match against Sting in, like, a cage that I don't even remember. There's, like...
That's, like... You know what? Like, the last couple years of WCW to me is just, like,
a
drug haze.
I kind of want to... I don't want to blow anyone's spot, but IVP videos on the down low, they have all that stuff. Like, if you buy stuff from them, they send you a secret list. Which, I mean, everybody orders off IVP, so I guess they know about this. Or you can get, like, every episode of Nitro from, like, 94 to the last episode.
That's awesome.
Like, you can order it by year, and it's, like, something like $60, something ridiculous.
Wow. And you know what's cool about that is they're probably taped off the TV.
That's even better.
So there's nothing cut out. The music's not changed. And our boys over at the Midnight Jury... we're talking about how they're disenchanted with the WWE Network because there's things going to be edited and music's going to be changed. And I agree with that. I think music plays a big role in a wrestler's character and a feel of a show. And that does piss me off. It pisses me off when I play a video game and the music's gone. It pisses me off when I turn on a DVD and songs that I thought WWE owned, they don't, and they're gone. So I agree with you guys on that aspect. And
but would that prevent you from ordering the WWE Network?
No, and here's why. I'm going to order the WWE Network because of the pay-per-view package is just a money saver in itself.
What, you don't want to go back and watch like old WCW and ECW?
If I wanted to do that, I'll just like hook up my VCR. Like I got all that shit, you know?
Yeah, but is it really worth the hassle?
It is. It is because I don't like when things are edited. I can't like it bothers me. Like I'm obsessive compulsive about it. Like I'll remember things, certain things, and if certain things are cut out, I'm gonna be like, eh. Like they're gonna put Over the Edge on the network because that's their promise to keep every pay-per-view. But they're gonna edit things out, and you know that makes sense. But if I'm gonna want to watch Over the Edge, I'm gonna want to watch it the way I remember it. Like, holy shit, what a fucked up night. Look how uncomfortable and awkward and weird this is for the wrestlers and the backstage promos. I mean, like, I don't want to watch edited content. So personally, for me, the WWE Network is going to be awesome because the pay-per-view packages themselves, it pays for itself, basically. You know, it's just like such a deal to actually watch pay-per-views that, you know, I don't watch anymore. I haven't seen any pay-per-views outside, like, the Big Four in years.
You could you could go to dinner with the family and accidentally end up at a restaurant that's showing the Royal Rumble and get to see it. I told this story a couple weeks ago, but when we went out to dinner, when you and Kevin were trying to figure out where we were watching the Rumble, and I was like, I got to do dinner. We ended up at Boom Burger.
Okay.
Which is like, it was a cool deal, but I walked in and I saw the pre-show, and I'm like, we're here all night. We're here for the Rumble. And there was fucking nobody there.
No one was there, so you were able to watch it.
There were people there, but it wasn't like what you hear about like at Pub 46 or Fridays, like where it's like you can't fucking move. Like there were people there, and it was fun to be in that environment and listen to people pop.
Yeah.
You know, when Kevin Nash comes out and when Batista came back. Like it was a lot of fun just to be there and kind of take it all in.
Right, right.
But no, I agree. It's definitely worth the pay-per-view package. I pretty much brought a MacBook just for it.
Just for it. Yeah. I mean, like, that's cool and all. That's fine.
And because I hated the laptop at Tony's house.
Yeah, that sucked. So are we done with TNA talk?
Aries beats Zema Ion in 2 minutes, which is disappointing. They could have easily cut out a Dixie promo and let them actually have a match.
Yeah.
Angle beats Rude by DQ in a non-title match because EC3 clips Kurt's knee, and then they play up the angle that Kurt Angle is hurt, so you won't see him on TV for a while. And then
he wants to go back to WWE in the worst way.
Yeah.
He just, but you know what? With their extensive physicals they put them through now, he might not even be cleared. I wonder if even Sting would pass a physical.
I guess we'll find out, right?
I guess we will.
Then Joe beat Rude for the number one contendership.
I think right now it's too little too late. I loved Samoa Joe when he first debuted. He was a monster. But the way he's been treated lately, it just kind of seems to me that he's lost his magic. You know what I'm saying? Like, he seemed indestructible and invincible and angry, but just keep the mic away from him first off. It doesn't fit who he is. I just think it's too little too late right now. They got to really build him back up as a monster first for people to buy it. You can't just throw him back into the title picture and be like, hey, remember Joe? Because quite frankly, the last 4 or 5 years, he's just been kind of like floundering in the mid-card.
I concur.
God bless you, sir.
So, I mean, that was Impact in a nutshell.
Yeah. Okay.
Nothing to really write home about. I mean, it was a little disappointing. You were expecting a little more, especially knowing that they were in, you know, overseas, and you're expecting a little more out of the, you know, the product and the storyline.
Yeah.
But whatever. I mean, we'll see what happens this week. I don't want to, you know, no spoilers, just tune in. I do know past guest of the show and current WSU woman superstar, and she said she'd take me home the other night. She did. Alpha female.
Nice.
Because I was flirting with her, and she said, was your fiance sink? And I said, hey, Ree, I'm going to take a shot at alpha female. And she looked at me like I had a third eye, and she said, go ahead.
That's awesome.
So she was like, oh, I'd take you home. And I was like, fuck yeah, I'm going to get up in them guts, alpha female.
Oh,
God. What? I like her.
That's...
She's a really pretty lady.
That's awesome.
She's nice too.
I don't know.
I do. I have to get my chops from her though. I feel like I'm a man of my word, and I need it to happen for the podcast.
She wrestled last week on Impact.
Was she? She was on last week.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. She. No. Not Impact. Explosion.
Right. That one night only thing.
No, Explosion.
Explosion.
That's their internet show.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Explosion. Yeah, I think she wrestled somebody.
Yeah,
ODB.
Adam Henning wasn't a big fan.
Right.
But I mean, you can't really judge her whole career because she had an awesome match with Jessica Havoc at on Saturday, just throwing fucking vicious forearms into each other's chests for like 2 minutes.
You know, it's a whole different story when you're out there in front of like they had a lot of people. I could say for TNA anyway, 5,000 maybe strong.
Right.
You know, live, not live, but television on cable. I mean, like, nerves definitely kick in. So I'm sure that will affect someone's performance if it's, you know, one of the first times they did something like that. But it's still awesome for her to do that. And I don't know. We'll see what happens with her in the future. Speaking of being overseas, our good friend Kevin Matthews just wrapped up a tour of India. He was with Sonjay Dutt. He was with Colt Cabana,
mm-hmm.
and he was with Trent Beretta.
Yep.
Yes, that's who he's with. And he recorded the whole thing, and I think within the next week or so, he'll be coming over the Casa de Eduardo to put together a nice video of his adventures in India. So look forward to that. It should be interesting to see exactly how those cats survived in a foreign land, especially Kevin Matthews being a... You know, Kevin Matthews.
Well, he was very active on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and he put a lot of videos up, and it looked like he had a great time. So, I mean, props to him for getting the opportunity to go over there and showcase his talent and see that part of the world and just enjoy himself, really take it all in. So he deserves it, and hopefully this is the start of things to come for him. I know he said on his Facebook the other day that he's got the itch now to kind of get out there and do a little more wrestling. So hopefully you get to see a little more Kevin Matthews.
Yeah, that'd be cool. And, you know, from some of the footage I did see, he looks like he's in really good shape. He's been hitting the gym. He doesn't have to wear the fat guy singlet anymore. So that's a plus. That's a plus for Kevin Matthews. So he's looking good, and good for him, man. Couldn't happen to a better guy. On to Raw.
Yes, on to Raw.
What are your thoughts on how they're handling Daniel Bryan? I know I'm going to get into this with Mr. Carino, because I'm curious to see how he feels about the current product. But how do you feel about him? Basically, right now, it seems like he's just kind of there.
He's in limbo.
Is it because they don't know what the fuck to do? Because they're just so set in stone with Orton and Batista being the main focus of the world title?
I don't think Orton and Batista is set in stone.
You don't?
No, I think it turns into a three-way with Daniel Bryan.
I want that just so he's part of it, and a three-way main event can work as it did with Shawn Michaels, Triple H, and Mr. Black. So that is
not on this DVD, by the way.
The Mr. WrestleMania DVD?
Yes, they did not put the Chris Benoit match on there.
Ugh, that was such a fucking great match. But anyway, so a three-way main event at a Mania can work. However, I believe Triple H's ego will stop that from happening because he needs his Mania moment. So he needs his match. And since Punk took his ball and went home, Triple H doesn't have a date for Mania. So I think Triple H is going to do the dance with Daniel Bryan, so to speak, and it's going to be fucking Orton Batista. I mean, who else would there be for Triple H to wrestle with? Because, quite frankly, his ego, Triple H's ego will not let him miss WrestleMania. He has to have his match in front of 100,000 people. He has to.
I think they are, because of what happened with CM Punk, I think that really shuffled the deck. And I mean, unfortunately, you know, they need to put Daniel Bryan in there with somebody. And his storyline, you know, works. It's either Kane or Triple H, you know, somebody in the Authority. Which is unfortunate because I really don't want to see Triple H, Daniel Bryan. Although I know Daniel Bryan will get a great match out of Triple H.
Oh yeah, I mean that's a given. That's definitely a given. But it's such a waste. I mean, it boggles my mind. First of all, why does Triple H need to have a match?
Yeah, anyway? It's frustrating that there's you know, Dolph Ziggler's losing dark matches on SmackDown.
Oh, who did? Whose fucking cereal did he shit in?
And, you know, they're just, you know, there's no Zack Ryder on TV. And even, like, Cody, you know, Cody and Goldust could probably run as singles guys. And Rey actually... I badmouth Rey Mysterio Jr. a lot just because I think he's old and I'm tired of seeing him. Yeah. He looked amazing Monday night.
Yeah, he did.
He looked great. And that match against the Wyatts, you know, and they got the Wyatts, you know, Wyatts and Shield, whatever's going to happen with them. I mean, there's so many options and there's so many people that you could put in that WrestleMania spot. I just don't understand why it has to fall to Triple H.
It's because, because he's Triple H and he married the boss's daughter. And he's god of wrestling. That's just who he is. He has to insert himself. He thinks he's a draw. When in fact, to this day, Triple H wasn't a draw. It was the guys he worked with that were the draws. Triple H was not the draw ever. He was never.
There were a lot of guys
he worked with when he was the heel. It was the guys he worked with. I mean, I can't remember.
Yeah, no,
ever
I understand.
To buy a ticket to see Triple H.
I think there's a lot more people out there who did that than you think.
Really?
I think so.
Not my cup of tea.
No, I mean everybody who was ever in the spotlight isn't going to have everyone's approval. I don't mind. Like I could sit down and I could watch like a Triple H DVD with his matches, maybe like two or three.
Yeah,
but I can't like. Now it just seems like the last year and a half, 2 years, like he's just there. I mean, and I get it because he's a name and he brings recognition to the brand, especially during this time. But at the same time, they're not doing anything to create new stars. You can't make a star a year. CM Punk can't be your star last year, and then he takes his ball and goes home, and then you create Daniel Bryan as a star, but that's it.
Yeah,
John Cena is our era's Hulk Hogan. No matter how you feel about it, he's the face of the WWE. But they're not really going out of their way to create new stars.
No, they're coasting. They're going to coast until there's competition. Because why not? I mean, quite frankly, they're making money. Their stock is at an all-time high, I believe. They're playing it safe. It's easier. You don't have to be creative. You don't have to think. And it's Vince McMahon's little toy, and he can, you know, put who he wants where he wants him to be. And that's just how it's going to be. Triple H is going to have that Mania spot, and it's going to be at the expense of Daniel Bryan. But you know what? On the plus side of things, if Punk didn't walk out, Daniel Bryan would be wrestling Sheamus at WrestleMania. And if you tune into SmackDown Friday, spoiler alert.
For
the five of you that might watch SmackDown. There's a six-man, because it seems like there's a six-man all the time now with the same guys. Sheamus accidentally punts, broke kicks Christian in the face, costing them the match. Daniel Bryan was also part of that tag team match. It was an opening match, and that was it for Daniel Bryan for the night, which is fucking poor booking. But I firmly believe if Punk did not walk out, that instead of Christian eating that broke kick, it would have been Daniel Bryan, and that would have set up their program. But now, Sheamus has something to do at Mania, because he's Triple H's boy, so he has, you know, Christian has the spot.
Christian!
I don't know which one's going to be the heel. Probably Christian. But yeah, so it's, you know, if Punk didn't walk out, it would have been Daniel Bryan, Sheamus at WrestleMania, which is just, you know, awful. But then again, maybe they're doing a slow build. I don't know. I think I'd like to ask Mr. Steve Carino about it. I have a lot of other questions for him. He's a well-traveled veteran of the squared circle. So what do you say we give Mr. Carino a call?
I would like to just a couple things from Raw.
Yes.
Before we call Mr. Carino. I know we're running short on time here. The animosity in the Shield is very interesting. I like the way it's going. Roman Reigns really captivates me. I like watching him. I like when he gets the look.
That drop kick on the apron is phenomenal.
He's a very talented man.
You know who he looks like? He looks like a guy you would see on the cover of like a Dirty Lady novel at CVS.
Like a Danielle Steele novel?
Yes. Like he would be on the cover. Like that's the guy that all the girls love.
Batista. 90s.
Oh, Batista sucks.
Batista thing I care less about.
The crowd doesn't care about him.
Enjoy the Usos.
Love the Usos.
Happy to see them beat the Raxel, whatever the fuck they're calling them.
Crapple.
Cena Orton. as many times as we've fucking seen it, it wasn't a bad match.
No, it can't be a bad match. I mean, of course, we can nitpick and critique and be like, oh, Cena doesn't bump right. He bumps funny. He's awkward looking. Whatever. That's his style. He knows how to wrestle. I'm going to say it. He does. He knows how to work a match. He has the pacing down. He knows. They know. They're pros. They've been doing it for a long time now. Of course, but I don't understand why they keep beating Orton. The only answer to that question is, wait, did this just stop recording?
No, it's still going.
Okay. The only explanation they keep beating Orton is, to me, is because he's going to win the Elimination Chamber.
Yeah, you know.
He's going to go in like, oh, anyone except for Christian, because Christian lost, but anyone can beat Orton, so this is anyone's game. So I guess, you know, that's foretelling of what's going to happen in Elimination Chamber. Obviously, Orton's going to walk out with the title. But I don't know. I've never felt right about a world champion losing clean often. It's just weird to me.
Yeah, 2 weeks in a row makes it look bad.
Yes.
But let's jump over. We're gonna call the king of old school, Mr. Steve Corino, and maybe we can talk some current WWE product, among other things, with him.
Indeed. We'll be back.
Now joining us on the Shining Wizards Hotline, he is the king of old school. He is a veteran of the foreign lands, and he is your favorite king, Mr. Steve Corino. How are you tonight, sir?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Please, thank you for taking the time.
Oh, well, thank you.
Huh, you're welcome. How's life treating you?
The life is good, man. I cannot complain. Good. Everybody loves to complain, not me. Life's good, man. I got a new baby, got a great wife. My oldest son's about to graduate high school. Everything's good.
How's the comedy career?
It's slow. You know, I don't get to do it much. I moved to North Carolina about 18 months ago, and living in the South, you know, I don't know if my humor would go over as well as it did in the North, but you know, and they don't have as, like, I live in the middle of nowhere, so like I don't have as many you know, venues that I could do it in. But you know, when I get the chance to do it, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, good. It seems like a lot of wrestlers are starting to venture out. I know Nigel does a lot of that stuff, and Colt does it, so it's always nice.
Yeah, I was going to say both of them are really good. The difference between me is I don't do any wrestling comedy, so you know, it's challenging that way to try and think of like legit comedy stuff, but you know, something that is outside the wrestling world.
Yeah, it sounds. I mean, living in the middle of nowhere, a new baby. I mean, it sounds like that should be just endless
material.
There you go. Thank you.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
So North Carolina, long way from the IWF in Nutley, New Jersey.
Oh my goodness, right?
Yeah. We were there from the beginning. With you and Kevin.
Yeah. Are they still around?
Yes, they are. They run very sporadically. A lot of like fundraiser shows. I know they're doing one April 12th, I think.
Do they still have the wrestling school and everything?
I believe the school got flooded.
Ooh.
And yeah, when they had the, I think it was Katrina or something.
Sandy.
Sandy, I mean, yeah.
Sandy was New Orleans.
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah. We're talking Jersey here.
Right.
Yeah, when Sandy hit, I think the whole school was just flooded and destroyed. So they've been closed for a while. Like Matt said, I know they're running sporadically here and there, doing like local shows and fundraisers and stuff like that. Not as much as they used to back in like, I guess what we saw you in like 98, was it?
Yeah, I was going to say 98, early 99.
Yeah, wow. That's going back. You've been doing this for 20 years.
It'll be 20 years this coming April.
Does it even feel like 20 years? I mean, like, you've been...
Sure does, man.
How's the body feels it, right?
How about this? Like, and I shouldn't say this on the air because it makes me look like a big puss. But, you know, with being a commentator of Ring of Honor, and that's usually two weekends a month, I've really started to save my body. And, you know... I mean, I've gotten heavier over the years, but I still put in the time to the gym, and I get bigger, you know, but I do love to eat, you know. And let's face it, Dick Murdoch was fat, too, and he made a pretty good career, though he died pretty early, so I'm going to try not to do that.
Yeah, don't do
that. And, you know, but, like, after the new year and everything like that, I started tanning again and really dedicating myself to the gym. And, you know, I changed my diet, but I somehow gained 5 pounds out of it. And so
it's muscle. You gained muscle.
Yeah, that's what I keep telling myself, but I think I'm full of shit. So I get to the – I'm just going to embrace my fatness. Like, Santa Claus is happy, and he's fat as shit. So, you know, I'm going to be happy as fat too, you know. My wife likes me the way I am. I don't know why, but it's all right, you know. And it's funny because people will get on me about being heavy, and I think – and me and Dreamer talk about this. Like, we have to work really hard just to be this fat, you know. Like, if I let myself go – man, I'd probably be like 350 easily. So, yeah, I have a match in San Antonio on Sunday, and it wasn't like, you know, balls to the wall, like the greatest thing ever. It was really good. Don't get me wrong. And I may have taken 4 or 5 bumps, but I have been so sore the last like 2 days. Like, I laid and took a nap with a heating pad today. You know, I'm walking around like an old man. I just took a couple ibuprofens. I'm like, man, I'm feeling old. And yeah, but you know, but for the most part, if I stay out of the ring, I feel great.
Well, of course, yeah, yeah, definitely. You know,
but yeah, 20 years, man. It you know, it goes very quick. But I'm feeling 40.
Yeah, I'm saying, like, well, first of all, I can't believe that you're 40, because, like, as a fan, looking back, it doesn't seem that long ago. But then when I, you know, look over your career, I'm like, man, this guy has been all over, and he's been doing this for a while. So just, like, I can only imagine how long it feels to you. But as a fan, it's just like Steve Corino. Like, I've been a fan since I was younger. I got familiar with you, IWF, and ECW. It does not, to a fan, seem that long ago, but it really is, actually.
Yeah, it's real weird. Like, you just, like, one day turn around and all of a sudden you're 40 and you've been wrestling for 20 years and you're like, wow, this is crazy.
Yeah, that's definitely intense. But you've accomplished so much. I mean, reading over your bio and everything, I forgot that you actually started, or early in your career, you were with Omega.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, back in, guys. You know, we're talking like 97, 98 and, you know, it was great because I grew up in like the Philadelphia area, but I was fortunate enough to be able to, you know, get in the car and travel all these different places. And I had met the Hardy Boys in 96 when, we were all just job guys. So we were all just jobbers in, you know, the WWF.
Yeah.
And, you know, me and Matt hit it off right away. And, you know, he had told me his plan for, you know, Omega, and I wanted to be a part of it, myself and Joey Mercury and Christian York. And, you know, we would just drive down there and be a part of what, you know, it was crazy because we, you know, none of us knew what was going on. We were just guys that loved wrestling and we wanted to be something different. And, you know, years later, people are like, oh, wow, you know, this is something good.
Yeah, yeah. And looking back on some of the old videos, that stuff was really awesome. It was a lot. They did a lot of groundbreaking stuff, and it was really incredible. And I completely forgot that you were a part of it.
Well, I was really nice and thin there.
Now, you mentioned your time being a job guy in WWF, and I don't know if many people are aware of this, but when they first announced the light heavyweight tournament, Steve Corino was a participant.
Yeah, and it's always something I wanted to find because. You know, like a screenshot. Like nowadays, you can screenshot everything. And the original brackets, I was in the original brackets for like a week, and then I was replaced.
Any particular reason why they took you out of there?
Because at the time they were doing the you know, the qualifying matches on like Shotgun Saturday Night, where like, you know, this was before like Scotty Too Hotty was Scotty Too Hotty. This is, you know, this is you know, these are the days when he was just Scott Taylor, and you know, Brian Christopher was just Brian Christopher from Memphis, and you know, it was all this big thing to, you know, put the title on Taka. So, you know, you would win a match on like Shotgun Saturday Night or Superstars or something like that, and you would qualify. I'm giving air quotes, qualify for the, you know, light heavyweight tournament. Well, my chance to qualify was in Atlantic City in '97, and I was wrestling Jimmy Cicero, which was crazy because Cicero wasn't a light heavyweight at all. And we ended up getting bumped off the show because the Iron Sheik and Tiger Ali Singh went way too long and they couldn't fit our match in. And I was angry for like a year at Tiger Ali Singh. Now he's like one of my better friends, but Yeah, for going over their time, and they had to scrap our match, and I ended up getting scrapped from the tournament. And in return, they sent me to Memphis at the old USWA, and I stayed there for the last couple weeks before that company closed, and which started a chain event of me closing companies.
You do have quite the record,
right? It's like it's the Armstrong curse.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. I mean,
yeah, right.
I wanted to talk to you about Puerto Rico, WWC. I know a lot of stories about guys going to Puerto Rico. It's crazy. What was it like for you venturing out there and working for the Colognes?
Well, it was so different. I went in 97 where I was 24 and I was, you know, so young and didn't know what to do. And, you know, I really learned a lot. But then I went back in 2008 and stayed for a whole year. And that's when I was on top as a heel. And you know, you realize, like, how different it was when I first started in 97. We would work 5 days a week. We would do television on Wednesday nights. You'd wrestle like two or three times on television because they would do the Saturday, Sunday show and usually a dark match at the end. Mm-hmm. You would work all week, house shows Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then you were off Monday. Tuesday, you went into the office to shoot promos. Well, by the time that I got back there in 08, now we were just Friday, Saturday, Sunday, sometimes Friday, Saturday, sometimes Friday, Sunday. You know, it was usually three, sometimes 4 days a week. And, you know, it was a great boost for me because I went down there in 08 and I didn't know what I wanted to accomplish. But I really felt like I needed to go to a place where see if I could draw as a heel. You know, back there, you're wrestling in almost the same towns every week, and it's very, very, very old school. You know, not to be that pun, oh, it's so old school. But this was kind of old school because, you know, you were playing off the TV, then going to the town and seeing if, you know, whatever you did on the television drew.
Yeah.
And I remember going to Bayamón, which was our main town, and Ray Gonzalez was the Universal Champion, who's just an amazing, amazing guy and performer. And, you know, Puerto Rican fans look at Ray almost in the same, you know, category as Carlos Colon. So, you know, I always wanted to do something with Ray, and I knew that it was down the line. And he came in and he worked Charles the Hammer Evans. Now, if you've ever heard of Charles the Hammer Evans or never heard of him, it's – he, what a turd. Well, just a turd. Yeah, just an awful guy. And
awful performer or just an awful person?
Person. Just didn't get it. Like, he just drove me crazy every because I was also on the booking committee. And every week I'd have to hear once I got back to the hotel or the apartment, hey man, whoa. What am I doing this week? What am I? Just shut up and just get there and have a watchable match, please.
Jesus.
You know, he just didn't get it. And so he gets the program with Gonzalez, and they end up drawing 250 people in Bayamón, which is awful. And business was a little down. So then, you know, it was the old three match, you know, series. You know, you get one, there's a DQ or double DQ or something thrown out. Next week, there's a little bit of revenge. Third week, you get the big revenge.
Right.
So the first week, it stunk up the joint. Like, he just couldn't listen to Ray. So, they do something in the back, something for TV, and he ends up like hurting Ray in this promo. And not like hurt his feelings, like just hit him in too hard. And Ray, he didn't speak good English. He goes, motherfucker, he's done. The next week we came back to Bayamón, we drew 175. Oh. Like, it went down 75 people because no one wanted to see the return.
Yeah.
So Carlos goes, next week, Thursday, you beat Ray Gonzalez for the Universal title, then come back to Bayamón. I go, oh, okay. In the time that I had beaten Ray for the title on a Thursday and it got around the island, the first me and Ray in Bayamón ended up drawing like 720.
Wow.
You know, we had popped the house. I'm like, holy shit, I can do this. And then we came back later and drew, I think it was 1,100. And, you know, business started really picking back up. I mean, not to what it was in the 80s before Invader murdered Brody and stuff like that. And
right.
Allegedly. And, you know, but it was cool, man. It was just weird because – you know, the hustle and bustle of trying to get paid every Tuesday, and there's always some excuse or, you know, some, oh, we had to take $300 out of your check because of cable was due this week. Wait, what? Let me pay it on my own. Oh, no, don't worry. We pay it. We just take it out of your check. I'm like, what kind of cable do we got that I'm paying all this money for? So, yeah, it was funny because when I left, I said, I need to get paid for everything you owe me. And, I think they thought $2,000. I was up to, like, $9,800 that they owed me. Oh, and, but, God. Like, it was just funny that he would go, no, I think it's just $2,000. Can I send you a check? No, you can't because it's never going to come. I leave this island. You're never calling me again.
That's it. Done.
Yeah, but it's a great place to get experience. And you know, it's Puerto Rico. It's you know, paradise. Yeah. If you can go down there and survive, and Damien Sandow was great at surviving down there. And if you can do that, then you're going to be okay and you're going to learn a lot.
What you have any advice for aspiring young talent that's headed down that way?
Get a part-time job.
Yeah, basically. You can't rely on being paid.
Work,
being
a payday. Work Monday through Wednesday something. I don't know. Hook in selling drugs. Do something that's in case there, you don't get that paycheck every week.
So after Puerto Rico, is this when you went straight to ECW, or did you do something in between?
No, I was back on the indies for about a year before I went to ECW. You know, I had once again done jobs for WWF and also worked indies and, you know, just getting my chance. And like we were talking about the IWF, before the IWF, it was AWC in Island, New Jersey. And that's where I was really developing the anti-hardcore character. And I had worked with Nova a bunch of times there and leading into like a big cage match. And Dreamer was there and he liked the anti-hardcore thing. And, you know, eventually there was an opportunity for a guy to come in, and Nova had told Paul, like, you know, oh, I know you want Reckless Youth, but I think, you know, Steve Corino would be, you know, a perfect fit. And we both ended up getting tryouts and I got a job.
Now, if my memory serves me correct, you came in as just a mouthpiece, and then eventually it led to the $100 challenge with Tommy Dreamer, where you bet him $100 that he couldn't do a drop toe hold.
Well, it started with I actually was like an opening match job guy for like Nova and Chris Chetty for, oh, I would say the first 3 months. And then we were in Trenton, New Jersey, and it was before I'm trying to think what it was before. It was maybe like 2 months. And then Dreamer's like, oh, I'll work with you tonight. And he goes, can you use the microphone? I go, I'm okay at it. And he goes, well, come up with something and come up with something funny. I'm like, okay. And I came up with the whole $100 challenge, and he loved it. And we did like a 22-minute match where I'd say 11 of it was on the microphone during the match. So it wasn't like your regular like ECW, you know, balls to the wall match. It was, you know, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of this, you know, It was something different, and he loved it. And you know, all of a sudden, I'm doing it in front of Paul at a show, and now I'm working Dreamer around the loop. And they, I had started the angle with Taz where I would work Dreamer on the house shows, but I would work Taz. I would do the stuff with Taz on TV where I'd like goad him into a match, but I'd end up wimping out, and somebody else would take the match for me, and so. Then it was like I had the worst luck. Taz put in his notice, and then like in this 2 week thing, Raven came back, and all of a sudden I'm like lost both my programs, my house show program and my TV program. And Paul came up with the idea of, you know, well, Tajiri is, you know, he can't speak English, and we're going to do something big with Rhino, and I want to teach him how to talk. So I ended up becoming this mouthpiece.
Wow, that's funny how things happen. It's also, it's interesting how you tell me, you know, Tommy Dreamer comes up with an idea and just says, just, you know, think of something funny. I mean, like, that level of just being creative on your own in professional wrestling today seems lost, especially in the WWE, everything is so scripted. What is your opinion? Do you think it should go back to that, where the superstars have more of a say in the character direction and storylines?
You know, it's an evolution of wrestling, I think, whereas the WWE is such a television show that you know, and they call it sports entertainment. It's very much like your Law and Order or Modern Family. They follow a script, you know, where would I personally love it to be more of a Curb Your Enthusiasm where you're going to improv some stuff? Absolutely. And I think a lot of times the talent is a little more comfortable with that. I know, like, watching the Stone Cold DVD, that, like, he was definitely more, you know, comfortable saying whatever came to his mind. I know, you know, on a personal level, me, I like to give me an idea of what you want, and then I'll just go with the flow. And I think that's where it always worked for me in ECW. Paul would, he was a guy that would give you an outline, and then you filled in the blanks. And because he wanted a very, you know, natural reaction and presentation of it to where the WWE is. You know, they're writing for the character, not as much for the guy. And, you know, it's not that it's bad. You know, you ask an 8-year-old kid or a 12-year-old kid that didn't watch the old ECW or grew up in the territory age, they're going to tell you that they love it, you know, because that's what they know. Whereas, like, you know, older people will go, oh, you know, I liked how Roddy Piper would just say whatever he wanted, or Rob Van Dam would, you know, be stoned out of his mind, but you still thought he was so cool, whatever he said that didn't make sense. You know what I mean? It's just, I think it's, you know, the business has changed, and it's not for the worse. It's just different.
Yeah, it's definitely different. I mean, Matt and I here, we went to a lot of the ECW shows in Philly. We were, you know, huge fans. When you came along, it was awesome. We went to the Hammerstein Ballroom shows. Now, if my memory serves me correctly, you were around when ECW jumped to TNN, correct?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, now, it seemed like right off the bat they were sabotaged. Is this when things started to fall apart behind the scenes a little bit?
I think, you know, just thinking back so many years, I mean, it's going to be 15 years this year.
That's crazy.
Everybody was so excited about going on TNN. And then I remember the first television taping, I thought it went all wrong, because why were we doing TV in, I want to say, Dayton, Ohio, when we were a Philadelphia company or a Queens, New York company? Yeah. Like, why are we putting our best crowd in there? Not that Dayton was a bad city, but, like, why are we going to a bigger arena and trying to tape TV when we are this, you know, alternative blood and guts and smoky arena, you know, type of company? And I, like, right from there, I knew Paul wasn't happy, and right away, and you know, the tape, I think the first taping got scratched, and we had to go with a second one, and right from then it was just bad. And I think they sold the advertising, and, you know, it's 15 years, but I want to say they sold the advertising thinking that they were going to get a 2.5 rating or something like that. Wow. And all of a sudden we got like a 1.1, and then, man, we were the redheaded stepchild. And you know, and Paul didn't do himself any favors either. You know, instead of being corporate Paul Heyman, he was Paul Heyman. And, you know, he fought them tooth and nail all along. I mean, he created the network to crap on the network that we were on.
Right, right.
And it was funny. I remember one time that he did a whole, like, 2 or 3 minute, like, profanity lace promo at the end. If you watch it on television, they muted it, and then they put subtitles that said, like, this is a crazy man or something like that. Like, yeah, like, it got bad. And, you know, the day we weren't renewed, I would have been more surprised if we got renewed.
Yeah, holy shit. It was just such a wacky time. I remember, for me watching, it seemed like there's so much that could have been done with the shows. And like you said, Dayton, Ohio, why wasn't this shot at the arena or
Queens? I mean, yeah, like, Queens would have thought been our best step forward.
Yeah,
to do the first TV, because, man, did I hate that place. That place was dirty. It was hard to get to. The crowd was on top of you. I mean, you couldn't make a half a mistake or they would shit all over you. And I thought, what a great place to show, like, if anybody's going to be on the top of their game, it's going to be that whole roster and that crowd. I mean, oh, you're watching, awesome, it for the first time, and you see people hanging over the rafters like they used to. I would have thought, man, I think we're on to something. This is this is Pearl Jam and you know, this is all Nirvana all into one. And it's, yeah, I definitely think that from the first get go, we were in trouble.
Yeah, I was scratching my head like, huh, this just didn't seem right. But, you know, you're speaking of musical acts. You have a little bit of experience. You interrupted, what, a Limp Bizkit concert, was it?
I did.
How was that?
You know, I wish, even all this time later, I wish I could tell you that, like, it was the coolest thing we ever planned out, but it wasn't. You know, it was literally, we were in Peoria in the building next to them. The building were together, but, like, there was two rooms. And I would say we had about 1,500 people, and I was supposed to wrestle the Sandman in a singles match, but you're never going to believe the story. But the Sandman was too inebriated to wrestle.
No way.
What?
Way. And So they came up to me, and this guy, Greg Bagger-Rosey, he was one of the promotions guys. We used to call him Greg Bagger-Shithead. And he goes, hey, you want to do something with the rock band? You just go on and you mouth off at them. And, you know, Axel and New Jack and Balls will run you off, and then they'll sing a song together. I said, yeah, man, that's cool. And all I thought it was for the house. And so we start going, and I said to Dreamer, I said, hey, man, I think we should film this just in case it's cool and we can play it on Hardcore TV. He's like, yeah, take Gabe. Gabe Sapolsky was the like the fan cam operator.
Yeah.
So that's why, like, Jack Victory's not in there, because they said, oh, we can only take one extra guy. So, like, during this whole thing, we made it look like one big long promo. And, you know, me and Gabe go into the elevator, and, like, I say goodbye to Jack. He yells, you're on your own. So we get in the elevator, and then we cut for a second, and then we go to we go in to meet the band. And we're just talking and all this stuff. And I just go, hey, man, I'm just going to go out there, and, you know, I'm going to plug the television show for your crowd and do this. Oh, yeah, no worries. I had no idea who these guys were, right? So I come out, and I go out the door to where the arena is, and I went, dude, this place is packed. I look out, and there's 15,000 people. And I remember, I put the camera down, and I look at Gabe, I go, who are these fucking guys? He goes, I don't know, Limp Bizkit or something like that. He's like, they got a song on the radio. I go, they sure do. Yeah. So I went, okay, what do I do here? I'm expecting they're like a local band, and they have a couple hundred people on the other side of the other side of the building that we're doing. Yeah, I get up on stage and I look around. And I said, "Oh boy, this is what we got." And if you watch it, all it is a plug. It's a heel promo, and I plug. I go, you know who I am. You watch me every Friday night at 8 o'clock on TNN. Woo! Got that. And the best part was all he did was curse to me, so you couldn't hear him talk much because we had to bleep it out. Me? Nope. I was nice and crisp and clear of what I needed to get out. And it ended up like making MTV news, and yeah, I didn't realize like this Limp Bizkit guys were pretty over.
Yeah, that was. I remember seeing that. I was like, wow, that's a big deal, because they were pretty hot back then. So I thought that
was really cool. It was amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome. Speaking of Sandman being inebriated, who was more terrifying to wrestle? Was it Sandman or New Jack?
Sober Sandman was the hardest to wrestle.
Sober Sandman.
Yeah, there was one time he had to do a run-in, and I don't know if we were in a dry town or not. He couldn't get any beer.
Oh, shit.
Me, Jack, Rhino, we were all, like, so happy because, like, he's going to come down. He's going to whack us with the cane a couple times, and he's not drunk, so it's going to be nice and light. And, you know, nope. I think he caught me in the the eye. He popped Jack in the ear. I think he caught Rhino in the throat. Like, oh, my God. This guy is worse when he doesn't have alcohol in him. Yeah, we made sure that he was always drunk every time. Wow. Because, yeah, he would hit you in the middle. Like, I guess he was just looking for, you know, if there was three of us in the ring, he saw nine, and he just hit the guys in the middle.
It's like the Rocky movie, hit the one in the middle.
Yeah, exactly like that. And then we used to piss him off because, you know, I'm a baseball fan, right? Where's the worst place to hit the ball besides off the end of the bat is when you get, you know, when somebody jams you, right?
Yeah.
And me and Jack would like literally run and try to jam him, and he'd have to come over top of us. And like Jack would always break the stick. It would be great because his head was harder, and Jack would jam him and you hear him, "Get off me! Get off me!" Yeah, because it hurts so bad. And but New Jack was great to wrestle. I know people have horror stories about New Jack. I don't know if he liked me or he just respected me because he respected Jack Victory so much. But man, I loved working with New Jack. He was easy. He was safe with everything. Everything that he would hit you with, you knew where it was coming. The guitar, the cheese grater, the crotch. The timing he'd have. And I hate to say it because people, New Jack was this. Man, he was awesome with me. I loved working with New Jack. It was, it was a night off because, you were going to go in there and you were getting hit with stuff and it was going to hurt, but he knew where to hit you where, it wasn't going to damage you.
So you'd rather get hit by New Jack than Balls Mahoney?
Oh, absolutely.
Because you took some.
It might be a fact that Balls Mahoney gave Michael J. Fox Parkinson's.
From the. Because the. I know he's famous.
Chair shots.
Telling people not to put their hands up because they'll look like pussies.
Right? Yeah. That's a true story.
That's unbelievable.
Man, if I had a time machine and I was with Dr. Brown, that would be the one thing I think I would change.
Really? I'd go back
standing up saying, "No way, you are not going to hit me full blast in the head with these chair shots." I'm lucky that I still have, the brain that I do.
Yeah, that's scary. I mean, like, who knows how many concussions you might have had because they weren't really checking for that back then.
No, and you were tough if you could keep taking them.
Yeah,
help.
Yeah,
that's I'd rather not be tough. Be tough in UFC. You know, wrestling you can just. Entertain.
Yeah, that's one thing I'm glad they've actually, done away with. Because even from a fan standpoint, sometimes it was just uncomfortable to see.
It is uncomfortable. And one thing I asked the guy from WWE.com, I said, "Hey, you guys are going to be playing all these ECW, videos." I go, "Are you going to edit some of these out?" I go, "Because it's pretty crazy, some of the shit that we did." He goes, "I don't know. They were still talking about that. Just think about all the unprotected chair shots and stuff. I wouldn't mind if they cut some of that out and just you could hear the chair shot, but you don't see it or something.
Right.
I don't want kids watching that and thinking like that's all right. I mean, a cheese grater, you can work a cheese grater and you could do this. And, the table is the table. It hurts to go through, but it's not something that's, going to really catch up with you later in life. But the unprotected chair shots to the head, I would be in favor of them either distorting it or cutting away real quick and,
doing something. I remember I used to watch I think it was Global. Whenever like something violent would happen, they would just cut to the crowd. I remember that. Specifically, so I don't know, something just I remember like back then I'm watching like, man, that's just rough, but we didn't know then the impact it would have years later on people,
right? Exactly.
I had no idea that was doing so much damage. That's just, it's insanity. You were talking about how New Jack had respect for you. Was there anyone in particular that you had a hard time working with that just didn't have the respect that you were owed?
You know what? It's thinking back years ago, I think a lot of it had to do with, now, you hear things and be like, man, I thought those guys were my friends. And, you find out like, people didn't like me from the beginning. And, I wasn't, guys like me and C.W. Anderson weren't required to do ring crew, which, pissed off the ring crew. But I mean, they were always nice to my face and they always worked well with me. But, hearing now, from Jeff Jones, who, he works with ROH and stuff like that, man, guys hated you and this and that. And I'm like, but like top guys, I got along great with the Jerry Lynn's and Justin Credibles and New Jacks and Sandmans and Dreamers. And, I'm getting along fine. It was like the opening cards. Like I was always close to Nova and he was always good to me and he was always honest with me. But other guys were like, they always worked well with me, but I guess there was like animosity there, man. That's a shame.
Yeah, that is a shame. You never know who's your friend and who isn't. It's a strange business when you're working with all these different egos and everything like that.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be. It's not like the greatest guy always gets the best push,
Yeah.
There's so many different factors into it, and I knew that early, and I thought like, If it's not meant to be, it's not meant to be. And if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. It's, you know, I was never going to be Bret Hart in there or Shawn Michaels or, you know, I'm never going to be Piper on the microphone and stuff like that. I'm just going to do the best that I can. And if it all works out, then cool. If not, oh, well, you know, my main goal when I first started wrestling was to get one match. Everything else is gravy now.
Oh, yeah. Well, you've had more than one. So
yeah,
congratulations.
Yeah. Oh, I wish I had one left.
How's the bump card? Is it running out?
Oh, I borrowed somebody's, I think.
Oh, shit.
You know what? Like, I have been so much more careful over the years. I you know, just, you know, making sure that, you know, the one, even the ones that are risky that I take, I make sure that I'm the one that I know how to take them. Yeah. And, you know, I've been lucky. You guys treat me well that, you know, they never say, hey, man, I'm going to drop you on your head tonight. I'll be like, oh, great. And, you know, so the couple big bumps that I've taken over the last couple of years, you know, is the ones that I know that I can take.
Right, right. You know, what was your worst injury? Because I don't remember you ever being put out for a long period of time with
anything. No, I would never miss matches due to injury. I mean, I broke my jaw in Japan with Kohei Sato. I lost three teeth. Hashimoto kicked out one and or two, and Takeo Mori took one out with a clothesline. Homicide took out my hearing.
Yeah, I remember that.
I can't hear out of my left ear. And then, you know, I've broken some ribs with Jay Briscoe about a year and a half ago. That's when I really decided, like, you know what, maybe this commentating thing would be more up my alley. And, you know, just bumps and bruises. I've broken my hand twice. You know, tons of stitches for shit that's gone wrong.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I can't go bald. Like I look like a mongoloid with a like bald head because Masato Tanaka like crowned me, with a chair that, or not a chair, a guitar that like, this was like, it was like cement was in it or something like that.
Oh God.
And yeah, I took 26 stitches from that. And yeah, so this is why you can't see me bald. It's ridiculous.
It wouldn't work. Yeah. You've actually spent a lot of time in Japan. How would you compare your time in Japan to your time in Puerto Rico? Like completely different worlds.
Oh, absolutely. Completely different worlds, completely different styles, completely different office.
Were you actually paid on time all the time?
I'm sorry?
Were you paid on time all the time? Were they good with
all that? All the time, man. There was never a chance that, you know, you wouldn't get paid. You know, I've done 79 tours, and, you know, if they told you a dollar figure, they would give it to you. You know, Hashimoto was great because, you know, sometimes he would give you bonuses or, you know, send you a sponsor that would give you bonuses in it. You know, it was always very honorable. If they told you that XYZ was going to happen on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, XYZ was going to happen Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And that's what made it so good. And it made it so, like, relaxing because you knew you were going to go in there and you were going to bust your ass and you were going to get beat up a little bit and the bus rides were long and stuff. But you knew that it was respected by the office, the rest, the fans, and man, it was a great run. I mean, I had a basically an 11-year run,
yeah,
with 0-1, and I, you know, I was when we were drawing 10,000 and all the way when we were drawing 100, you know, it was, you know, I got to see like both ends of it, and yeah, they always came through with whatever they said.
Yeah. And speaking of seeing both ends of it, you've been a part of Ring of Honor for a very long time, basically going back almost to the start until, you know, 2014. A lot of changes going on, a lot of changes with management, wrestlers in and out of the door. How would you compare Ring of Honor today to when you first started there?
Oh, it's so different. It's just, you know, and that's I think that people tend to forget how different it is now. You know, Ring of Honor is not, you know, Gabe and Doug and Rob Feinstein's ROH, what they had started. You know, it's different. It's very, you know, it's a television product for Sinclair Broadcasting. And, you know, that's why they had purchased it from Kerry. And that's why they, you know, put what they do into it. That's why the logo is different and everything. It's basically their brand for their television stations, and I think it's on in 88 different markets, but it's really, you know, become a television product. And, you know, some of the times the loyal fans from 2002 through 2010 were like, oh, you've lost what we were going for. And they just got to realize it's just a different product. You know, Gabe and Rob and Doug's vision was awesome. And so was Carrie and Adam Pierce's. And, you know, and now with, you know, a corporate back in it and Hunter Johnston as the booker, you know, it's still great. It's just a little bit different. You know, it's a different world.
How much control or say, should I say, does Sinclair have over the content of what happens? Do they have any say on who they want to go forward, who's going to be a main event, or certain kind of styles of matches? Do they have any say in that at all?
Oh, I'm sure. But I don't know that. It's very, very quiet, and people laugh. But it's very quiet about how things work in the office. And you know what? It's a don't ask, don't tell thing. Also, you know, things are good. You know, so why, you know, why poke the bear if we don't need to?
Right.
You know, I imagine that, you know, Joe Koff says, hey, you know what? I see that guy. You know, a lot of people don't understand why Matt Hardy was brought in, but they have to understand the business of it, the television business side of it. You know, Matt Hardy for a lot of years was on the WWE, where, and they were, you know, in front of 3, 4, 5 million people a week. People know who Matt Hardy is. And if you can get, you know, an extra 10% of those people watching your shows and stuff like that, just because Matt Hardy's on there, it's not that Matt Hardy is being, you know, featured. It is that fan that goes, oh, I only watch the WWE. Who do you got in this Ring of Honor? And you go, well, I got Michael Elgin and Kevin Steen and Steve Corino and Nigel McGuinness. And they go, I don't know if I've ever heard of those guys. And then you go, oh, we got Matt Hardy too. And they go, I know, I remember Matt Hardy and his brother Jeff. And, you know, and then they watch the show and they see Matt. But then all of a sudden they see these guys, the Adam Coles and the Michael Elgins and the Jay Lethals and the Tommaso Ciampas and, you know, and Kevin Steen. And they go, wow, this is what we want to watch. And they don't change the channel next week. They keep watching it. So, like, I believe that that's a part of the influence is, you know, making sure a guy that, you know, you may think is not your typical ROH-style wrestler is in so that the, you know, quote-unquote casual fan picks up on it and goes, oh, you know what, maybe, you know, I know that Matt Hardy's on this, or I know AJ Styles is on this. You know, because people can talk about TNA all they want, but let's face it, they get a million people a week watching their show.
Yeah, they do. I don't know if like they're growing that much, though. It seems like they've just kind of like treading water at this moment.
TNA or ROH?
TNA.
You know, but treading water at a million two, that's not too bad.
I guess you're right, especially like today's wrestling market is just so much different. You know, you can't really go by the numbers anymore because everyone's either DVRing it or YouTubing or going online. So I guess, you know, like it might even be more people watching that. How does Sinclair gauge its viewers? Because I know it's not in all the same markets that TNA or WWE are in. But then again, you guys are available online and you guys are available, you know, you can find it on YouTube. What would you say like the average viewership for Ring of Honor right now is?
That's a good question. You know, I don't get a chance to know that. I know it's good because especially the TV markets right now, like we've done shows this in 2014 in Nashville and Pittsburgh and San Antonio, and they've all been way bigger than they were, you know, the last times we were there. So the TV's working in the TV towns, and it sounds weird, but the crowds that have gone to Nashville and Pittsburgh and San Antonio are so different than – say New York City or Philadelphia or Chicago, where we don't have TV. And it's pretty interesting. I mean, the TV towns, people are, they're on, they know the characters, they know the angles, they're watching every week. And, you know, if you're on TV, you're over. And that's a real cool thing. That means the TV's working. So I would say people are watching, but you know, I wouldn't, you know, sit here and tell you numbers. Right. I wouldn't know.
Right. It's hard to gauge that. But like you said, gauging by the audience reaction, that you know that people are watching and they're getting it and they're following it.
Yes. Which is, yeah,
just
definitely
saying a lot, which is really cool. Also, another thing I've noticed, a difference between, you know, TNA fans, WWE fans, and Ring of Honor fans is, I guess, the closest type of fan reaction to the old ECW would be the Ring of Honor guys, the Ring of Honor fans. They seem like they're vocal, they're smart, they're appreciative of what's going on. Would you compare the two crowds to be similar, or would you say they're, you know, it's two different monsters, the ECW fans, Ring of Honor fans?
I definitely think it's two different monsters, not that Ring of Honor fans are bad or ECW fans were bad. I definitely think it was different, you know. I had just done the Extreme Rising show at the end of December in the old arena, and you could tell, like, these people weren't Ring of Honor fans, you know. Yeah. They were old ECW fans, and, you know, Ring of Honor fans are, you know, you got to remember, ECW closed in 2001. You know, if you're a 18-year-old kid watching Ring of Honor in 2014, I mean, you were, what, four? You know, when ECW closed, you know, it's just a whole different fan base. And, you know, Philadelphia, New York, you still get those passionate fans that, you know, want to see that five-star in-ring match, you know, where, and they don't want to hear anybody talking and they don't understand the television product and stuff like that. But I think it's really turning to more of like the casual fan that would go to, a WWE show, and they're going, wow, okay, we see characters, but this is crazy action here. You know, it's these guys are, you know, putting in so much work to, not that WWE guys don't. I mean, I watched that six man on Monday with the Wyatts and Goldust and Cody and Ray, and it was phenomenal. You know, that's the type of action I think people want. I think Ring of Honor gives that to them, in almost every segment.
Right. Basically, every match there's something happening. And same with WWE lately, a lot of great matches, a lot of great crowd responses. And speaking of crowd responses, what is your take on the whole Daniel Bryan situation as far as the WWE not really giving him that green light push and seemingly not listening to exactly what the fans want to see on television? I mean, like, do you think they're missing the boat with this?
We overthink sometimes as fans. Like, I watch Raw and SmackDown, and as a fan, like, I try never to analyze it and say, well, they're doing this or they're doing that wrong or that spot didn't work or anything. I like to sit down. My wife's not an educated wrestling fan or a smart mark or whatever you want to call her. You know, she wants to see who the divas are because she watches Total Divas. But we watch it, and like, we watch it as fans. What makes us laugh? You know, there is no doubt that Daniel Bryan is so over, right? Yeah. But you don't think that WWE knows this? You don't think like a money-making machine like the WWE doesn't see what's going on? I think us as wrestling fans want Daniel Bryan to be in that main event spot right now, whereas the WWE goes, we're making some money off this guy right now. Let's string it along and see how far we can do it, because we're going to need a main event in WrestleMania 31. And this is how I use it a little bit. Stone Cold Steve Austin was over at King of the Ring 96.
Yeah.
You know, that's when the Austin 316 promo. And then go back and see how long it took him as they strung him along to people, and people wanted to cheer. And, you know, they were cheering him way before, they were cheering him Survivor Series 96 with Brett. You know, they were cheering him in every match, and then finally they did the turn and put the rocket under up his ass a little bit after 97, after WrestleMania in 97. I would say it was 13. And, and he didn't get the belt again until the next WrestleMania. So you got like a year and a half where they knew he was over and he was going to make big money for them, and they just took their time. And I think that's what they're kind of doing here with Daniel. They know he's over. He's not going anywhere. Think about how genius it was to put him with the Wyatt family for 3 weeks. They literally turned him heel and the crowd said, no way.
Yeah.
You know? They were just showing like, hey, let's push this guy over here, so like the fans feel such you know, sometimes sympathy when he gets screwed over, but they feel like Brian is one of them. And, you know, he's doing everything that they would do if they were wrestlers. And I think it's great. You know, everybody talks about also the controversy with Punk and stuff like that. To me, if I'm Vince McMahon or Triple H or Stephanie McMahon, I have it in my mind of how Daniel Bryan versus CM Punk is going to be my main event at WrestleMania 31. And they're over enough to where you could sustain that to get people so worked up when, say, Punk is, you know, comes back and he wins the title and he's a heel again, and, you know, and then Bryan finally wins the Royal Rumble, and, you know, you walk into WrestleMania and, yeah, of course you're going to have a great undercard, but you walk into that match, it's everything. Like, people won't be talking about how Bryan got screwed in Survivor Series or Royal Rumble 2014. They're going to remember that Bryan selling out a 50,000 seat house with Punk, and then, you know, he's the guy, and they know it. They're when they hold him back, and I'm using air quotes, when they hold him back, they know they're holding him back, and they, you know, because there's going to be something greater. They're not going to let him go, and they're not going to push him out of the thing. This guy is doing everything right, and I think they're great. And you could tell a couple weeks ago when, after the Royal Rumble, and it's Stephanie and Triple H, and Triple H goes, "Oh, you guys upset? You didn't get what you want?" And, oh, people are angry. And Stephanie was great on the microphone, because one chant was Daniel Bryan, the other one is yes. And she goes, "Oh, I can't understand you guys. You know, you seem to be getting mixed up in your chants." And they stopped, and they found one chant. Like, she put it right, she had them right in the palm of her hand. And
that's true.
Yeah, Bryan's, you know, Bryan's going to be great for a very, very long time.
That's wow. That's really well put. That made me feel a little more optimistic about the situation, because my fear was that they're just going to wait so long to pull the trigger that maybe people are just going to get tired of wanting it and stop caring.
I don't think so, because they always give you that little hope spot where he gets up a little bit and right back down. It's not push down, push down, push down, push down. It's, you know, and then they acknowledge it. Maybe Brian or Daniel Bryan is the face of the company. And, you know, people are, oh, yeah. And then, you know, he gets that win over Orton. And then you do something to him the next week. And he's got to climb the mountain again. It's I believe it's great booking, because as a fan, and I like Bryan, I do want to see him the top guy. But I tune in every week to see how bad he's going to get screwed and how he's going to overcome. It's the never-ending story. He's got to live to fight another day. If he's on top for too long, what happens? That's when I worry that, like, people go, "He's there. Oh, now what?" You know, and that's always the you know, as a booker, that's always what you fear the most, is that your babyface is so over, and you give him the title or you give him that top spot, and then all of a sudden people are like, "Well, what have you done for me lately?" And right. I think that's what they're trying to avoid right now.
Wow. Very well said, coming from a, you know, experienced point of view. That makes a hell of a lot of sense. That really does. And it made me a little more optimistic as to what they're doing. It just seems like, you know, sometimes they'll maybe not necessarily drop the ball, but just go in a different direction than what the fans want. But this, it seems like they know what they have, and they're finally actually doing a nice slow build. So we'll see.
I hope so. I think they are. You know, I could be completely wrong, and they'll drop the ball like I think they did with Ziggler. But
yeah,
you know, I hope they don't.
Yeah, but the thing with Ziggler, it's like, from, you know, a fan standpoint, you never know really what's going on behind the scenes, and you never know who he's pissing off. You know, it's certain things like that. Like, as a fan, you think, like, oh, why isn't he getting this push? But then again, you know, you look behind the scenes, maybe just things aren't working out for him back there. That's just causing him to not get that, you know, showcased spot. It's like, you never know why things go on, really.
I agree. You know, that's the thing. You just never know.
You know, so you can really, you know, blame the WWE, because maybe he's hard to deal with. You never know. Steve, man, we've had you on for a good amount of time. We'd love to have you on again. I could talk to you for hours about your match with Dusty Rhodes, more ECW. We're going to plug a bunch of stuff for you, and then anything else you want to say, just have at it.
Oh, thank you very much.
So, for you guys out there, you're listening to this, Steve does a podcast as well with Rob Dimension, Extreme Odd Couple Podcast, xocpodcast.blogspot.com. Definitely check it out, and follow Steve on his Twitter, @King Carino. His exchanges with Rob are pretty hysterical. And as a baseball fan myself, I enjoy his baseball commentary. And then worldofcarino.blogspot.com. All the information you need to know about his 20th anniversary tour, merchandise, Mr. Wrestling 3, everything related to Steve Carino. This Saturday night, he's going to be in Havlick, North Carolina.
Havelock,
excuse me, my apologies. North Carolina at the Havelock Rec Center for Shockwave Wrestling. Next weekend, Friday and Saturday, he'll be in Philadelphia for the Ring of Honor Anniversary Show, and then the TV tapings on Saturday, and then Sunday in Binghamton, New York, at the American Legion 80 for Excite Wrestling against Joe Gacy and I.B. Green, and then you're off to the U.K.
My yearly trip to the U.K.
So there's more dates up there. The 20th anniversary tour is going strong. Steve Carino, it has been a pleasure. We appreciate your time. Did I miss anything?
No, you were great. I loved it.
All right, great, Steve.
It was like a good commercial for me.
It's about time I did something right.
There you go. Well, Steve, thank you so much for joining us tonight, man. You were fantastic.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
My pleasure.
Take care, buddy.
You too.
This is the Indie Power Rankings for the week of February 10th, 2014. Follow Indie Power Rankings on Facebook at facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings and on Twitter at Indie Power Ranking. Now for your top 10 of the week. Coming in at number 10, it's the St. Louis Anarchy champion Gary J. A very successful weekend that included a six-man tag team match victory over Chris Hero and an impressive singles win over Davey Vega. Grabbing the number 9 spot is Josh Crane. An impressive weekend in IWA Mid-South as he had victories over Trick Davis and Todd Morton. He continued his winning ways at Beyond Wrestling's St. Louis tapings, where he teamed with Trip Cassidy and grabbed a victory over Dale Patricks and Marcus Edwards. Coming in at number 8 is Caleb Conley, the PWX Heavyweight Champion. Took an impressive victory over Cedric Alexander for the WrestleForce title and an impressive win over Pepper Parks at CZW's 15th anniversary show. Coming in at the number 7 spot is the EPW Elite and DWW Alternative Champion Reed Bentley, an impressive victory this weekend over Chris Hero at IWA Mid-South. Definitely will put you in the Indie Power Rankings top 10. Capturing the number 6 spot, Ron Mathis, half of the D1W Tag Team Champions, 3-0 this weekend with an impressive win at Rockstar Pro Wrestling over Ganger, a huge victory over former ECW World Champion Rhino, and he finished off the weekend with a win over Vance Desmond at Remix Pro. Making a return this week in the number 5 spot is the OVW Heavyweight Champion Marcus Anthony. He managed to defeat Eddie Diamond twice this week, and he continues his dominant winning streak. His first appearance in the Indie Power Rankings in 2014, the number 4 spot belongs to Kevin Steen. After an impressive win at AIW Friday night against All Ego Ethan Page, he went on to Ring of Honor on Sunday and won a huge 4-way contest for a future ROH World Heavyweight title shot, getting the win over Michael Elgin, Jay Lethal, and Ring of Honor TV champion Tommaso Ciampa. Capturing the number 3 spot is Ricochet with an impressive 4-0 weekend at Dragon Gate in Japan. Ricochet is someone you need to keep your eye on, and I think we'll be seeing him in the Indie Power Rankings for weeks to come. Capturing the number 2 spot this week is the Dreamwave champion Christian Rose. Very impressive weekend going 4-0, including a win in a tag team match against Chris Hero, a singles win against Danny Cannon, and then at St. Louis's tapings of the Beyond Wrestling shows, he beat both Alex Castle and Mikey McFinnigan. Grab it. And for the second week in a row, the number 1 spot goes to Money Matt Cage. A victory over Gunnar Franks at SCW this weekend and a win over Malachi Matthews at Beyond Wrestling St. Louis tapings help Money Matt Cage retain his number 1 spot in the Indie Power Rankings, and the SCW Heavyweight Champion and AAW Heritage Champion continues to make 2014 money. Make sure you tune in to the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast every Wednesday to hear the Indie Power Rankings brought to you by Indie Power Rankings. Again, follow them on Twitter at Indie Power Rankin and on Facebook at facebook.com/IndiePowerRankings.
Hey, y'all. This is Jesse Sorensen, formerly of TNA Impact Wrestling. You are listening to Shining Wizards Podcast.
Now it's time for the Heel of the Week, brought to you by HeelTurnTees.com.
Whoa.
How do you like that fucking production?
Oh, wow. Big deal.
Yeah, man. HeelTurnTees.com. Check them out. Follow them on Twitter at HeelTurnTees. We just gave away a t-shirt last week to a lucky fan, and we're doing another contest. All you need to do is screen cap or take a picture that just shows that you're following HeelTurnTees, and then we're just going to randomly pick a winner.
Sweet. What do they get?
They get a free t-shirt from HeelTurnTees.com.
That's amazing.
They have the Induct Owen t-shirt, and they have a Henning t-shirt.
What about a Catch Owen t-shirt?
Boo. Do you have a heel of the week, Mr. Eduardo?
I do. My heel of the week, your Indie Power Rankings is my heel of the week.
You didn't like my Indie Power Rankings?
That is the heel of the week, or the Indie Power Rankings.
All 10 of them?
Yeah. No, I'm just kidding. I didn't even listen to them yet. Heel of the week. That's a good one. That's a good one. I got to really think about who I didn't like and I wanted to boo on my television. Triple H, heel of the week. He's just pissing me off. The character itself pisses me off. What he's doing behind the scenes pisses me off. It's all blurring the lines between work and shoot with the whole Daniel Bryan thing. I'd have to go with Triple H. Off the record, if you want to talk about something that happened on Raw but was off the record, I have to go with the WWE announced team on Raw being heels of the week, being recorded, not knowing that they were being recorded at the time, reacting to the CM Punk chants, and, you know, not being so kind to the fans and to Mr. CM Punk.
Be a star, Eddie. Be a star.
Be a star. For those of you who haven't heard that yet, find it before WWE takes it down because it's a trip.
My heel of the week, I will go to WSU. Sassy Stephanie.
Oh, she's so sassy.
She attacked Jessica Havoc after the match against Alpha Female with the help of DJ Hyde. So she is my cunty heel of the week. Bro, you don't know how many times they said cunt at the WSU show.
I'm sure a lot.
I was flabbergasted. There was a child sitting two rows in front of us. A child.
Oh,
could be more than 5-6 years old. Everyone was coming out, Mickey Knuckles screamed, "I'm going to fucking kill you." They stapled a fucking dollar bill to some girl's vagina during the match. It was intense.
That's hot. That's fine.
Let's see. What do we got for news and notes?
News and notes.
We didn't talk about Lita going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, you know what? I have mixed feelings on that. I just feel like, kind of like with the whole Edge situation, it's just too soon for that.
Yeah, you think so?
I think it's too soon, and I don't know. I mean, like, it's just weird to me. I think of Lita, okay, she was groundbreaking in a sense that she did, like, her moves to guys, because the moves that she was doing to guys, the girls at the time wouldn't be able to catch her, basically. That's all she had to do with the guys. The girls at the time basically weren't taking those moves until Trish Stratus came along. But I don't know. How long was Lita hot for? Like a hot minute, right? Like 3-4 years?
I think just as long as Trish, maybe?
No, I think Trish had a longer run because if you remember, Lita broke her neck on a television show doing a fucking her and Conrana, and that was really it for her.
Oh, see, I don't remember that.
Yeah, I think it was like on Angel or some shit. I don't know. I mean, like, I get it. But on the same note, there's so many other deserving people. I mean, I think they could have waited on Lita. And I don't think she was around long enough to be Hall of Fame worthy. I mean, like, I don't know. It's just weird to me.
I mean, I think they're really going to go with a strong class.
But why not Medusa? If you're going to put a chick in.
She threw the fucking belt in the garbage.
Yeah, but you know what? Look at what the Ultimate Warrior held up Vince for $500,000.
Yeah, but I don't think Medusa's as big a name as the Ultimate Warrior is, you know?
True, but neither is
like
Lita.
No one would be like, yeah, I think Lita's more. I think more people were excited about. If you said, would you get more excited about fucking Alundra Blaze Lita going in. I mean, people would pop for Lita because that's Attitude Era, the thong, the whole thing with Edge and Matt Hardy.
It seems too soon.
We're just getting older.
Maybe.
And I think they're looking to go into WrestleMania 30 with a super strong class.
Who do you think's left to book?
Cyndi Lauper.
I would definitely be down for that. I think that's fine.
And then I don't know who else.
I don't know. That's a good question.
There's somebody else that they got to put in.
It's not going to be Savage or Owen.
No.
No way. Maybe
guys,
never.
Please, seriously, with the fucking Jake is in and Lita's in before Savage or Owen. I don't think the WWE has any control over that.
Yeah, that's basically not their choice, really.
There's a lot of legal mumbo jumbo and stuff that they have to go through and probably pay.
And Savage is like a touchy subject to Vince, no matter what. So, yeah, they do what they want to do. I had something right on the tip of my tongue I wanted to bring up, and I completely forgot. So I'll think about it. What else you got?
I got them changing names of WWE superstars. They took Antonio Cesaro and just made him Cesaro.
That's fine.
And they took Big E Langston and just named him Big E.
Whatever.
Hogan apparently is back. The Raw after Elimination Chamber, that's what they're reporting. Him and The Undertaker returning that night.
Okay. That's going to be a big Raw because it launches the network, so they're going to stack the deck. Our friend of the show, Rob Van Dam, was backstage negotiating with Triple H onto an appropriate time for him to come in, hopefully before WrestleMania 30. So maybe they'll do some kind of Money in the Bank at WrestleMania again.
Oh, bringing it back. Now, I saw a bunch of reports. Did fucking Shelton Benjamin really have a dark match against Tyson Kidd, or was that...
That's racist, Logan? Matt.
What? No, seriously. They were reporting that Shelton Benjamin and Tyson Kidd had a dark match.
I don't think that happened.
Okay.
I don't think that happened.
Because it was... Funny thing, it was reported by a fan who just so happened to be named Daniel Lopez, and WrestleZone picked it up, and then they did a re-release where they said it didn't happen, but then Benjamin and Kidd on Twitter were going back and forth about the finishing move, so I don't know what happened.
You know what, though? Who cares?
Fair enough.
Who cares? They don't have plans for either of those guys anyway. Doesn't matter.
It was a bad week to be a wrestler and have hands.
And why is that?
Both Matt Jackson of the Young Bucks and Adam Pearce severely fucked their hands up.
Jesus.
Matt Jackson was in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Lucky enough, he doesn't have to have surgery.
Well, that's
he just
good.
Tweeted a picture tonight. His hand is all fucking wrapped up, though. So I don't know how much time he's missing. And Adam Pearce is in the same boat. I kind of feel worse for him because he only like wrestles once in a while. He's going. He's trying to become the announcer for the San Diego Padres, which would be an awesome job for him to have. But I mean, he goes out to fulfill a booking and he fucking busts his hand. There's another picture of him with his hand all fucking wrapped up too. So
oh,
I mean.
God.
That kind of sucks, and I feel bad for those guys.
Here's some breaking news. Hurricane Katrina did not ruin the IWF school.
That you know what? I feel like I might be able to sleep a little better tonight knowing that
it was
not
actually Sandy. It wasn't Katrina.
Yeah.
Katrina was New Orleans. I'm an asshole. I'm such an asshole.
You know what? There's a lot of... A lot of weather stuff going on around here lately, so you know it's okay.
It all blends together.
Yeah, get it all fucking mixed up. I mean, come on.
You know what? I had WrestleMania on the brain. I was thinking New Orleans. You know, when you think of WrestleMania, you think of Kevin Knight.
Yeah, I mean, who better to headline a WrestleMania than Kevin Knight?
You know, I got a good story about Kevin Knight.
Okay.
I was at a Dunkin' Donuts in Nutley a couple months ago. Dropping someone off somewhere, and must have been like 3 or 4 in the morning. Actually, I think it might have been Thanksgiving night. And I walk into the Dunkin' Donuts, and I see all these like girls like surrounding this guy. And I think these girls, they couldn't have been more than like, oh, I don't know. They looked like they might have just graduated high school. And in the center of the table, like Jesus at the Last Supper, is Kevin Knight. Holding court at Dunkin' Donuts on Thanksgiving night at 3 in the morning.
I mean, is there any better time to hold court?
You know what? You're right. There is no better time to hold court. And then again, it might not have been Kevin Knight, but I'm pretty sure it was Kevin Knight. Because didn't Kevin Knight, like, he looked goofy, right? He had, like, a goofy face, like, real goofball look. Yeah, so I think that it was Kevin Knight. Allegedly Kevin Knight holding court, surrounding himself with high school girls at Dunkin' Donuts at 3 in the morning. Or it could have been a lookalike.
Oh, yeah, that's possible. You know? Lots of lookalikes out there.
A lot of lookalikes. A lot of lookalikes that look like Ronald McDonald.
There you go. I don't, Eddie, I'm out of stuff, bud.
Really? That's it?
That's it. I don't really, it could have been a heavy news week, but I've been kind of busy working and stuff.
Yeah, work's been killer. I'm trying to think, is there anything else left to discuss? Oh, I'd like to thank Mr. Steve Carino for an awesome interview.
That's right. Check out.
I'm just gonna say real quick before you plug him.
Oh yeah.
Ooh, plug him, baby.
Nice.
We have to have him on again.
I think we will make that happen
because we originally said we were gonna go a half hour with him. We went an hour and we had to stop it because you know there's family things that need to be taken care of, responsibilities outside of wrestling, but there is so much I want to talk to him about. I want to talk to him about his feud with Dusty Rhodes, more about his time in ECW, his time, you know, Ring of Honor coming in. I want to get in depth with his feud with Homicide because they really fucking had it out. There's so much, and that guy just is full of great stories.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't – the secret WCW contract –
yeah, my God. His work with tryout in WWE.
His stuff with Kevin Steen, Scum, the Ring of Honor stuff. I mean, there was a lot. We didn't even touch on Colby.
Oh, my God, yeah. So much. So we'd love to have him back on. Absolutely. Yeah.
So, I mean, check out his podcast with Rob Dimension, xocpodcast.blogspot.com, worldofcarino.blogspot.com for all his upcoming bookings, and follow him on Twitter at King Carino. And let him know you heard him on the Shining Wizards podcast. Give us a cheap plug. I'm going to start going into plugs, Eddie. If you think of anything, just cut me off.
Okay.
ShiningWizards.com is the website. ProWrestlingTees.com/ShiningWizards. Three great shirts, and I think maybe more to come. I have a lot of ideas in terms of T-shirts. ShiningWizardsNetwork.com. You heard the plug at the beginning of the show. Check out all the shows. Please support them. I know it's a lot. Everyone seems to be backlogged on podcasting. But it doesn't hurt to support them. Check out a show or two. Follow us on Twitter at Wizards Podcast, at Heel Turn Tees. They are our sponsor. We're giving away a free T-shirt, at Smash Wrestling, great Canadian Federation upstart. Check them out. Pro Wrestling Syndicate's running a huge show on the 22nd of February. Colt Cabana against Chris Hero. Mickey James in a four-way dance with La Rosa Negra, Missy Sampson, and Angelina Love. Kyle Reynolds.
Bonesaw versus Alex Reynolds.
Alex, damn it. Motherfucker.
30-man over the top on the spot Royal Rumble, where the winner gets a guaranteed title shot. And I believe Starman gets the number 30 spot because he beat Moff for it. And Moff is going to be number one.
And Moff is going to be live in studio next Wednesday night.
Yes, he is.
The Heavenly Bodies take on the returning tag team of the Lone Rangers, Pat Buck and John Silver.
Indeed.
So ProWrestlingSyndicate.com. Check them out. Support them. Kevin Matthews will be there. We will be there doing our thing.
That's right.
And I think that's it, Eddie.
Yeah, I think that's it. We covered everything we needed to cover.
Mr. Kitty.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff going on. So, stay tuned for next week, Dan Moff, and we'll catch you on the flip side.
Damn Skippy. What do you want to end this with? I'll put it in after.
A fucking bullet in the mouth.
Is that a song?
Oh, no, I was just thinking about killing myself.
Oh, can you not do it in my apartment?
Okay, yeah.
Blood out of that rug looks like it'd be a pain in the ass.
You know, I just started watching Dexter. Did you watch Dexter?
Yeah.
Okay, don't tell me anything. I'm on the fifth or sixth season now. Sixth season. A lot of people said it went downhill like after the fourth.
Who's the main villain in the fifth season?
Well, Julia Stiles just left, and now I have it's Colin Hanks episode.
Ooh, I like those. I like that season.
Okay, so I don't understand where it gets shitty.
Does it
really get shitty?
I think the end. No, it doesn't get. Here's the problem.
Without spoiling.
Here's the problem. The way Dexter ends is disappointing.
But everything leading up to it is okay?
Yeah, I mean, they get a little weird. You'll see during this season, the season you're watching, it'll get a little weird.
Weird as in, like, just uncomfortable?
Possibly. It depends. I mean...
A jump-the-shark kind of thing?
No, I don't think a jump-the-shark kind of thing. I just think it gets weird. But, I mean, there's great moments. You know, I like the season with Colin Hanks.
Okay. How many more seasons are after that?
Two?
Okay.
Two or three?
I'm
two?
Flying through these fucking things.
Maybe two? Because the next one is that, and then the next one is that. So, yeah, two. Didn't like the season with the fucking Mexican guy, the DA.
Oh, and he, like, the best friend?
Yeah, I didn't like that.
Yeah, I mean, like, you, like the whole time I knew that guy was just a piece of shit. I didn't understand why Dexter was like, maybe he could really be my friend. Like, yeah, I wasn't... Yeah, you're right. That was kind of like an eh one.
Yeah.
But then it really picked up. Like, the last couple have been great.
The Jonathan Lithgow season is my favorite.
That is the best.
The ending?
The best.
The ending is the best.
Oh, my God. Fantastic.
I'm getting, like, chills just thinking about it. Fucking awesome ending.
That was the best season. And he is so good. And you put Jonathan Lithgow in anything, and it's going to be good. And speaking of television shows, I'm currently in the process of developing a show about Roseanne. The television series Roseanne.
Nice.
So we'll see where that goes.
She was on the Joe Rogan podcast about 3 weeks ago. It's very interesting.
I'm thinking hopefully this picks up and we can get some guests. I know friend of the show Kirk Everswick is going to join me on this. And I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting.
I wish you the best of luck in your future endeavors.
Thank you, sir.
No problem. Thank you guys again. Keep supporting the podcast. Keep listening. Support independent wrestling. Support all wrestling. And maybe we'll see you at a wrestling show next week. Next weekend's a big weekend. Ring of Honor, Dragon Gate, PWS.
When PWS is next?
Next Saturday.
Oh, my God.
It's 22nd.
I have to fucking get those videos done.
And this Sunday, late plug, Beyond Wrestling, Feeding Frenzy. Gulak taking on Kevin Steen, Dickinson and... Jaka taking on Tommaso Ciampa and somebody else.
Johnny Mangue.
Johnny Mangue. Happy birthday, Johnny Mangue.
Happy birthday, Johnny Mangue.
So, yeah, get out there. Check him out at Beyond Wrestling on Twitter. We are the Shining Wizards. I'm Matt.
I am Eddie.
Mr. Kitty is a faggot.
Indeed.
I'm going to pick a song when I hit the stop button.
See ya.
See ya, suckers. Oh, sorry. Kept away from that which makes me whole. Eyes fixed, no dilation. Back again, or so the story goes. Images crumble quickly. Familiar ties, the fade to black. The past is behind me. Determination.